KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
On To the Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
You have this kind of asymmetrical warfare coming from a guy who's great at a soundbite, lousy at an answer.
So are you looking for your own billionaire?
Nope. No, I don't want my own billionaire. I'm going to raise the vast majority of the money.
Brace yourself, America, for what?
King Trump.
I'm Warren Olney. To the Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To the Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I have known Roger Ross Williams so long. He was Roger Williams when I knew him back in the 20th century, back when he was working on a little show called Last Call, not Carson Daly, a show that nobody knows because nobody saw it, but that's how we met.
That's true.
And he's gone on to some small success, being the first African-American director ever to win an Oscar for directing for the short
Music by Prudence.
By Prudence, and he got to give the shortest speech in Oscar history.
Yes, but it did go down as one of the top 10 all-time most famous moments of the Oscars.
I would imagine it would be, just for the fact that you won, let alone the fact that your producer almost threw like a hook around you. I thought I was watching Showtime with the Apollo for a moment there. And then,
yeah.
And his newest film, feature film as director, is Life Anime. First of all, thanks so much for being here, Roger.
It's great to be here, Elvis.
It's good to sit across from you in front of a microphone after knowing you for all this time.
I know.
It feels a little weird, doesn't it?
It does feel weird. I've never sort of been on your show, so it's an honor.
But let's talk a little bit about Life Anime. Remember you telling me how excited you were about Ron Suskind's book. Talk a little bit about getting your hands on the book.
So, you know, I've known Ron for 15 years. We worked together at Nightline, did a show for PBS produced by Nightline. And so, you know, I did a couple pieces about Ron's family. I did Ron's wife meeting her parents. They met under the Biltmore clock in New York, and I did a story about that. I did a story of Owen learning to ride a bike when he was a little kid. I even actually worked on Owen's bar mitzvah video. So I'm kind of their in-house documentarian. So when, you know, when he was writing the book, he came to me and he was like, this is it. This is the film. Let's do it.
And the story is that Owen, as a boy, until he was like 3, had no developmental issues whatsoever, then they just suddenly had a turn, didn't they?
Yeah. About a third of people with autism are regressively autistic. So around 2.5, 3 years old, Owen was struck with autism, and he lost his ability to communicate, to connect with his parents, you know, and Ron describes it as a kidnapping.
And it really feels like that, because we get this sense of him immediately just being pulled out of the family. He suddenly is almost like this orphan within his own family, isn't he?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it was just so devastating for Ron and Cornelia to have this sort of, you know, happy, talkative, communicative kid, and then he's gone. So I think, you know, if Owen were born with autism, it would have been different, but that sort of shift really devastated them.
And so much of what you do anyway is about communication. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you're attracted to as a filmmaker, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I started out as a journalist. I want to tell stories. I want to be a storyteller, so.
But people who sort of have to find other ways to tell their stories, like Prudence, who has to find another way to tell her story, and God Loves You, God, is people finding other ways to sort of shape narrative. That really interests you, people who kind of on the margin finding ways to tell these stories and draw attention to them.
I think, you know, I think because I myself identify and feel like an outsider, I feel like, you know, someone living on the margins, you know. Owen identifies with sidekicks. I feel like a sidekick. You know, Prudence's story, Music by Prudence, was so... You know, Prudence is someone who was discarded by her culture.
And so many of these people you seem to be attracted to are people who are kind of written off. I mean, you talk about the gay culture in Uganda, people who basically are stigmatized by just being different.
Yes, yes. So with Prudence, it was disability. In Uganda, it was the LGBT community. And with Owen, it's people who live with autism, who often people sort of turn the other way.
Yeah, and tell a bit more about the story, because he found a way to connect with the world again through Disney Animation.
Yeah. So, you know, Owen couldn't speak for a number of years, but he watched endless Disney animated films. And one day...
really started talking back to them.
Yes. Yeah, so one day he was watching The Little Mermaid, and the scene where Ursula says, "Just your voice," Owen starts saying, "Juicervos, Juicervos." And they're like, "What is he saying? What is he saying?" And then he kept rewinding this part where she says, "Just your voice." And they realize he was saying, "Just your voice." The first words he uttered are, "Just your voice." They're like, "What?" So that was sort of amazing and revelatory to them. But then they thought, the doctor said, "It's just echolalia. It's just him repeating it." So they sort of lost hope then. And then one day, it was Walt's birthday.
Walter being the other brother in the
Walt
family.
Walt was the brother in the film, the older brother. It was his birthday, and he gets sort of sad on his birthday, and Owen came in the room and said, "Walter doesn't want to grow up like Mowgli or Peter Pan." And they realized that Owen was learning to communicate through these Disney animated films. So what Ron did was he went to his room one night, he took a Iago puppet, and he started speaking to him in the voice of Gilbert Gottfried. Ron does it well, I'm not going to do Gilbert Gottfried. And he says, you know, "Owen, how does it feel to be you?" And Owen says, "I can't understand anything that's going on. I don't have any friends." And that was the first conversation Ron had with Owen.
It's interesting, too, because, again, I just go back to, and having known you for so long, just as I was watching all these things, just would think about, wow, it's all about somebody trying to find a voice. Mm. So much of what you've done has been about that, really. It's just interesting because I feel like you've had a voice ever since I've known you, but that you've been so attracted to these stories about people finding a voice is completely fascinating to me.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, growing up, I really didn't feel like I had a voice. You know,
really?
I felt invisible. I struggled as a child. And
in what ways?
I had a rough childhood. You know, what God Loves Uganda was about me growing up, you know, it was about my issues growing up as a black gay man in the church, singing in the choir where I was not accepted for my sexuality. So that was about dealing with that. But I felt this sense of alienation that I was like sort of, you know, wasn't part of the community. And I've always been making, I think every film I make is to deal with that.
But so much about what you do as a person is about being in parts of communities and being a professional filmmaker or journalist. You made yourself into parts of these greater communities anyway, but unless people know you, it's always been a part of yourself that you kind of keep away from people, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I like to talk about those issues through my films, you know, like through Owen, through Prudence, through the LGBT community in God Loves Uganda. You know, that's how I express myself, is through my filmmaking.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people who have come to know you over the last 10 years know you through these films rather than having spent time with you, where you're a gregarious guy who likes to stir up trouble. And
yes.
And likes, in fact, has an appetite for stirring up trouble. And these films are, in their way, doing that too, because they're drawing attention to issues that people really still don't want to talk about.
Exactly. You know, I got in a lot of trouble with God Loves Uganda and with the...
But you were kind of spoiling for a fight a little bit with God Loves Uganda.
Well, yeah. I wanted a fight. I had an issue with the church, and I'm like, I'm going to take it head on. I'm going to go right deep into the darkest place where these issues are playing out in Uganda, you know, death penalty for homosexuality, and I'm going to confront it head on.
It's the treat. We're talking to provocateur Roger Ross Williams, whose new documentary is the film Life Animated. But that idea of just sort of like making people pay attention and disrupting the status quo, how far back does that go for you, do you think?
You know, I think it went back to when, you know, when we were working together back at Last Call. You remember, we were doing renegade movie reviews where I would film you in a theater as you were watching the movie. You would turn around and comment, and then we got sued by one of the studios.
Yes, yes, after we did the review of The Specialist, a movie that nobody should have gone to see anyway. But I still remember we were like running some movie theater. This is how weird it was. Like 1994, so this woman goes, "Where are you guys going?" And gave us a, remember this? She gives a ride to the theater. We were running to a screening.
Oh.
And we were running up 6th Avenue. This woman goes, where are you guys going? We were going to, I think there's a screening at the old Hard Rock Cafe. And she goes, I'm going there. And she drove us there.
She drove us? Okay, I don't remember that. Yeah, so even back then, you know, I was really trying to, you know, mix it up. You know, even I worked at CNN for years, and they would always sort of give me these special projects to go out and like. And I remember I had to follow George W. Bush, who was on the campaign trail, and I made such a provocative film they couldn't air it.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. You took some small amount of pride in the fact that they.
I took pride in that. So you know, when I got to go into, you know, actually make films, independent films, I was going to stir things up.
But the thing is also too, you love filmmaking, and that's one of the things that really comes across in all these movies that you made, your love of the medium.
Yes. You know, there was one point back when I was a journalist and I was working for the Sundance Channel and I was interviewing filmmakers at the Sundance Film Festival. This is like back in the mid-90s. And I told myself, I've got to be on the other side of the camera someday because these people are following their dreams. They're telling stories that they're passionate about. And I was like, what am I doing? I got to do this. And I made it happen.
Was the first time you went to Sundance that year that we went for CNN? Was the first time you'd gone?
That's right. We went and covered it. I had gone the year before for the Sundance Channel.
Okay.
With my talent, Jennifer Tilly and John Cryer, were my two talents, and I covered the festival interviewing filmmakers.
Yeesh, I'm sorry about that. But I just remember that year you were just, it was interesting watching you going to films and not being able to get what you want to get from people because you found a thing that people find so often is they'll say one thing off camera is when you start to talk to them, especially when it's in that situation, they'll go to the pro forma things and say what they think they're supposed to say. And I just remember you being really kind of irritated by all that.
Yeah, you know, my goal as a documentary filmmaker is always about getting to the truth and telling the truth. And if when you get to the truth, people get angry. People don't necessarily want their truth exposed, and it becomes painful for them to watch that. And so even when I was doing pieces for television, people would watch it and they'd be really pissed at me because I would hit some nerve, I would hit some truth, and that's what I try to do in every film.
And what nerve do you feel like you're hitting with Life Animated?
You know, with Life Animated, it's about this massive population of people living with autism who are often looked past, who are left behind. And, you know, Owen has such a rich, incredible world, and it was about getting in his head and showing that world. And his world is so much richer than ours because we have this bubble around us that protects us from the world. Owen is exposed. He has no bubble around him. He is who he is. And he really, he's a kid who was raised on myth and fable and story. And he's really wise.
But that idea is for creating a mythology. Again, we look at these things you've done as the last few years. They've been about, again, creating these sort of stories, which in effect are creating mythologies, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, what is the saying? There's like, you know, only a few great sort of stories and fables that get retold over and over and over. And, you know, when we're dealing with Owen, this is really Joseph Campbell stuff. This is a kid who has become an expert on myth and fable and story. And that, you know, and that's something that was always relegated to, you know, sort of children's tales. But this is what we all need. Stories are what we all need to survive. And Owen is an expert on that and in a sense, an expert on life.
Well, if you think about, though, all those fables and myths that have been the stuff of Disney are really these time-worn fables anyway, that these stories that go back a long ways. I mean, Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid is a centuries-old story, and some of these things that Owen is attracted to are these stories that are these myths that have spanned centuries, aren't they?
Disney's just ripping off these stories that have been told for thousands of years, you know? They're brilliant at that. And we see.
And they were so generous in allowing you to use some of the ripoffs for it.
You know, I was very lucky that they gave me the keys to the kingdom. It was.
Did that surprise you that you got the kind of access from Disney that you guys ended up getting?
It was very surprising. You know, it all happened because Carrie Putnam, the CEO of the Sundance Institute, and I'm on the alumni board there, introduced me to Sean Bailey, who's a trustee of Sundance and the president of Disney Productions. Sean was the person who really shepherded this project through. But there was one moment where I went and met with Sean for the first time, and you know, he was like, you know, why do you want to tell this story? Why are you the person to tell this story? And I said, because I identify with Owen, and you know, because I won an Oscar.
Well, there's a short version of it, I guess. We'll be back more with a troublemaker and Oscar winner Roger Ross Williams. His new film as director is Life Animated. It's a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. Support the podcasts you enjoy by donating at kcrw.com/join.
Welcome back. The room is still smoking here. It's the treatment. I'm here with my old friend, Roger Ross Williams, one of my oldest friends, as a matter of fact. His new film as director is Life Animated. And I guess what I find so interesting about that is watching the film, it's that thing you hear from people who have kids, and they say their world has changed by watching these films with kids. And because Owen's childhood is this membrane through which he connects with the world, is this protracted sort of way of being around a kid all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the families, you know, we've done these screenings now. We're on the festival circuit, and it's, audiences are reduced to childlike joy in watching the film. It's been really incredible that we just won an audience award last night. I think we've won like 7 audience awards at festivals. But I think it's because it sort of unlocked this sort of childlike love of these films, of these classic fables. And people are just sort of overjoyed. I haven't seen audiences react like they've reacted to Life Animated. It's just mind-blowing.
Not for any of the films you've done in the past. Hey, this is a different kind of reaction you're getting.
No, because this is a film about, this is really a film about the love of a family. It's a film about the love of story. It's a film about the power of story. And so when you see how much love the Susskinds have as a family for each other, people just melt because of that. And I think that's why audiences react. We opened the True False Film Festival. We were opening and closing night film. There's 1,400 people opening night. Closing night was 1,700 people standing and cheering. It was like a rock concert. The Montclair Film Festival, Stephen Colbert moderated our Q&A, and it was 1,700 people just screaming and cheering. And Owen thriving up on stage with Gilbert Godfrey doing voices and talking about how he feels the love in this room.
That's actually one of the great moments in the movie where he gets to meet Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes, yes. That was, you know, we kept that a secret, and that was such a big moment. His reaction is so genuine and so great, and people are just like, you know, when that happens, you know, Owen knew Jonathan Freeman, who's the voice of Jafar. Jonathan called Owen on his 19th birthday because Owen went to see Mary Poppins and Jonathan was playing a bit role and he was reading the playbill and he goes, "That's Jonathan Freeman in the cast. He's the voice of Jafar." And they went backstage and they wrote a note to him and he called Owen 2 days later on his birthday and they've been friends ever since. And Jonathan says that he didn't realize he didn't realize that his role would actually change someone's life. That this role, like, he's Jafar and he didn't think about it.
It was just an acting job then, wasn't it?
It was just an acting job. It was just a voiceover job for him. But it changed this kid's life. And when Jonathan talks about that, he is always in tears. He's always in tears.
One of the things that was so great about the movie is that it allows people to be sort of unapologetic for their feelings about that animation. I mean, because so people at a certain age, they get so guarded about that kind of stuff. But in addition to it being the story of Owen and that family, it's also a way for people to interact with those films in a way they think they're past. You know, they think they've outgrown those movies.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, and even, I mean, look, even the most ardent Disney haters love the film. You know, this is like, you know, I mean, look, I mean, I wasn't like a huge fan of Disney when I started this, but I learned so much about the power of these films through Owen. And I think that it gives people license to love Disney.
Yeah, yeah. So it gives you a chance to be a kid again. And just, again, it's that object or that object lesson of being able to see it through a kid's eyes again and being reawakened to these things that you thought you put behind you. And there's like a kind of a moment of that kind of magic that in some way I know that happens in almost all these films that you've done, where people get a chance to sort of live through the protagonist of the film. Is that a conscious thing for you that you do, or do you think it's kind of subconscious?
Absolutely. I think that I think that started with Music by Prudence and that I really wanted to tell the story from Prudence's point of view. I think that often when you see films about people with a disability, it's from the outside looking in, and this was about from the inside looking out. And the whole idea is to get into Owen's mind and get into his world and get deeper and deeper. And by the time you're in the sidekick animation, the fully
and talk rendered, talk about the, because he's created basically his own kind of fan fiction.
Yes.
With all the sidekick characters from all the Disney films.
Yes. So the last chapter in the book is the story that Owen wrote and created himself, and it's about this little boy who, at age 3, a storm comes on the horizon, and he's lost in the storm, and he ends up in the land of the lost sidekicks. And him and the sidekicks have to battle these monsters that correspond to the monsters in Owen's life. And they have to find their inner hero to overcome these monsters. And so we animated that story with this amazing animation company in Paris called McGuff. And about a third into the movie, you go into Owen's world. You're ready. After you've gotten to know Owen, you go deep into his mind. And it's this sort of living, vivid color.
And seeing that section of the film, I just thought, when is Disney going to make that movie, for gosh sakes?
Well, I don't know.
Well, yes, you do, apparently, based on that incredibly long and pregnant pause. You try to figure out what you can and cannot say. So that's not going to be your first animated film?
I would love it if it were my first animated film. But, you know, so we'll see. But it is something that I think would be a great animated feature.
My guest is Roger Ross Williams. His new film, his new documentary is Life Animated. It's The Treatment. But I think at some point in all these films, these the protagonists, because they feel like characters, finally get the chance to sort of stand up and be who and what they are. Not literally in the case of Prudence, but at a certain point, they just get to own who and what they are. And their joy in being what they are is something that you really respond to, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a really big line in the movie where Cornelius says, "Who decides what a meaningful life is?" And, you know, Owen,
and that could be a line in any of your films.
That's true. Yeah, I never thought about that, but you're right. You're right. It's, you know, it's really about sort of connecting and understanding the other, and that Owen has value to, then that Prudence has value, and that, you know, all these people who are left behind have value to and something to teach us. And that's Owen has something to teach us. And that's, you know, what the film has always been about for me.
But Prudence or Owen or the people in God Loves Uganda are all people who have had to create these inner lives for themselves because they have been kind of abandoned by the mainstream. And there's so much pride and so much pleasure they take in having created these worlds because it becomes their kind of their form of heroism, you know, their way of coping.
Yeah.
And the thing that they all have in common is that at a certain point in all these films, we realize these people are in their way fearless, aren't they?
Absolutely. There's so much bravery in all of these characters, in Owen, in Prudence, I mean, for sure, you know, this is someone who lived not knowing she was human, but had this inner world, this musical world, this brilliant voice and this brilliant world that kept her alive. And when we all discovered it, we were enriched by it. We were enriched by seeing her talent and her beauty. And she made it through the tough times with that. And I think that that's what I feel like. I feel like I had to live within my, you know, inner world, and I had to make it through tough times in my childhood. And I think that's why I sort of, you know, create these kinds of films.
So these people really, as you're saying, are all kind of in their way like these sort of metaphors for you, the people who had this opportunity to triumph over these things that other people would have, and I shouldn't say would have castigated them for, have like sort of said horrible things about them that turned them into these social pariahs, and they just can't be that.
Yeah. Isn't that what documentaries are, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, all the films you make, if it's good, it's personal. It's, I mean, you can't make a documentary. It takes such It takes so much out of you to make a film. It's such a long process. It's such a struggle, you know, raising money. You better be passionate about it. And it has to be something that you are expressing about yourself. That's the only way you're going to get through it.
It's funny as you say it, though, because for a long time, documentaries weren't that. You know, they weren't personal stories. This may be something we've seen maybe over the last 25 or 30 years, that they've become that. They become much more personal. Because there used to be these sort of objective looks at some other culture that would sort of like basically some white guy kind of going, yes, isn't this amazing kind of stuff? And you've got to be part of this quantum shift in what documentary filmmaking has become. And I'm wondering if that's one of the things that drew you to it, that you saw the world of documentary was changing and there's finally a place for you to plant your creative flag.
Absolutely. You know, I guess in the past, people may have thought of documentary as journalism. Documentary's not journalism. Documentary's filmmaking. It's art. It's about expressing yourself creatively. And that's what it's been for me. And so it was freeing for me. The first time I, you know, when I made Music by Prudence, I was like let out of prison. I was free to express who I was, who I am. And it was liberating. So for me, it's about pushing those boundaries even more and creating stories and using the techniques of narrative filmmaking and sort of, you know, using them in my documentary filmmaking. And I think that's what's happening is the two worlds of narrative filmmaking and documentary filmmaking are merging together. And people are starting to get confused because the lines are getting blurry.
Because I think what happens so often in these films, because it really is people going up against institutions in one way or another. Not one way or another. In some way, each of these films has been about some protagonist going up against this thing that's this really oppressive force that, be it in two cases, it's Africa. And then these countries that have these hierarchies and these structures and these social systems that are completely resistant to change. And in Life Animated, it's about how the world basically wants to push the autistic members of our society to the side. But there's still a kind of an institution that exists that people would think is easier to ignore or to crush rather than pay attention to it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because this year at Tribeca Film Festival, the Susskind family got a Disruptor Award, which is an award about people who are disrupting the mainstream and them for disrupting the autism world because they created what's called affinity therapy, this idea that encouraging and reaching someone with autism through their affinity, which is the thing that they focus on. So Owens is Disney. An autistic person have many different, you know, there are many different affinities. I met someone the other day whose autistic son was a Hitchcock films. So it's about using that to reach them. So in the end of the film, when they go to France, is the first conference on affinity therapy that they ask Owen to come and speak at. And that's the speech he makes at the end of the film. MIT, Stanford and Cambridge have started a study, and we actually, this didn't make it into the film, but we actually took Owen in an fMRI machine, showed him Disney films, and saw what it did to his brain.
So the reaction to it with his brain chemistry.
Brain. Yeah.
But also, by doing that, you make the film much more experiential rather than having somebody comment on it, which is to say, it becomes more like a fiction film and less like what we can think of a documentary as being, right?
You know, I won the directing award at Sundance, and one of the things that the jury said to me is that this doesn't feel like a documentary. It feels like a fiction film. And one of the jury members was like, why aren't you doing fiction films? And I was like, well, that's because no agent would sign me. You know, like, because of Sundance, finally the phone rang.
Well, apparently Sundance has a purpose after all, and we're out of time. Roger, thanks so much for doing this. Really, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
My
this
pleasure.
Is great.
Please. My guest is Roger Ross Williams. His new film as director is Life Animated. The show was recorded at NPR West by Marcia Caldwell. It's mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. I'm waiting for Roger's film on Song of the South. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.